Welcome to Rough Drafts, How God Writes His Love in Our Stories, a podcast that explores the faith journeys of our friends and neighbors in Burns, Tennessee. Everyone has a story to tell, and in this podcast, we'll hear powerful and inspiring stories of how God works in the ordinary lives of people like you and me. Our stories are unfinished and perfectly imperfect. They are just rough drafts, a glimpse of what is to come because God is still at work, writing plot twists, introducing new characters, and bringing good even from the most challenging circumstances. Join us as we see what God is up to in our stories. Here's your host, Matthew Hyatt.
Well, if you know me, you know that one of my superpowers is the ability to make an absolute fool of myself. And today's guest was part of that happening one day. You see, she works at the place that I go to the doctor. And I don't know if she knows this story, but it was Halloween one year, and I walked in for my annual sinus infection, my nurse had taken me back, weighed and blood pressure and all that. So I'm sitting in the room waiting, and our guest walks by the door and says, "Hey, Matthew, how you doing?" And I smiled and I waved, and I could not figure out who she was for the life of me. So I asked my nurse, who is this lady in the orange jumpsuit? Because I think she was dressed like an escaped inmate or something for Halloween, if I remember, something like that. And my nurse turns around and looks at me and says, "You're married." I said, no, that's not why I'm asking. And then she gives me this look. I said, she waved at me. She said my name. Obviously, I'm supposed to know who it is, but I can't figure it out for the life of me. So I think she goes out and talks to you to see if my story was true. She came back in and tells me who you are and says all of the ways that you know me and nice things you had said about me and is just rubbing it in my face that I couldn't come up with your name. Well, as the appointment progresses, I see my doctor and he gives me that beautiful steroid shot and antibiotic, that cocktail you need in Tennessee once a year. And my nurse comes back in the room holding the syringe. She goes, "Well, the doctor asked your best friend out there to give you a shot, but she said it might be weird since she knew you and you don't even know her name." So ever since then, I have not been able to forget Miss Liz. Liz Wall. Did you know that story?
I maybe had gotten a snippet of that. That is hilarious.
Yeah, she rubbed my nose in that the entire appointment. It was great.
I have a feeling I know which nurse that was.
Yeah, you do. Because you know what doctor it is, too. So.
Right, absolutely. I love it. That is great.
You know, names are so hard sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially if you meet as many new people as you do.
Well, and you too. You meet a million people all the time. Now, you got to cheat because you had a chart.
Uh-huh.
You
know? Yes, exactly.
I just had to walk in feeling half drugged, and I felt so bad. I told the nurse, I said, "This is HIPAA. You can't breathe a word of this to her." You know? She just laughed and laughed.
It comes in handy a lot of times.
She says, "She's one of your care team. I can talk to her all I want." We had a good time with that. So, Liz is a lot of things besides just a name that I don't know in public when I need to. She's been involved with a lot of the charities here in town, and right now she's the chair of Kinsman Redeemer. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me. What's your name? Yeah.
My name's Matthew.
Matthew.
You're Liz. Okay. We've got this out of the way.
Right. No, so glad to be here and get to talk about the Lord, you know, the awesome things that he does. So,
you know, at church in November, we do something called Name Tag November, which is Name Amnesty Month. And it's the month that if you can't remember someone's name, you're supposed to ask everyone. That way you don't get caught for who you don't know. But after that, I'll never forget.
Yes, whoever came up with that is a genius.
Well, I'm not a genius, but it was shortly after that visit to the doctors that I came up with that. Because I told you that story happened in October and November was Name Amnesty Month.
That's awesome.
So, anywho, I've been looking forward to telling you that story for a while.
That is great. I love that.
So you are the chair of Kinsman Redeemer,
which is? So Kinsman Redeemer is a homeless ministry in Dixon. We are out serving about 110 folks throughout the week, really, but primarily Monday and Thursday evenings, making sure they have food and tents and sleeping bags and hygiene items and most importantly, prayer and an opportunity to know more about the Lord, receive the love of Christ, and just walk alongside them in whatever way the Lord calls us to do in whatever way is most helpful for them. So,
well, how did you get started in that? Because that feels like a big thing.
Oh, you know. Well, the most current part of that, there's more of a backstory too, but the most current part of that is I was, you know, I work part-time at Dixon Medical Associates. I have Mondays and Tuesdays off. On Tuesdays, we had been, a group of us had been going around for years to some of the different nonprofits in town and just praying with them.
I should have talked about the prayer team in the intro. Oh, you've got to talk about that too.
Okay, I will.
We're already squirreling, but the prayer team, this is super
okay.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. You want to do prayer team now?
We sure, can do yeah. Okay, do
sure.
Prayer team.
Okay. So, wow. So we'll jump back another 10 years. We're like, we need some of that time music, you know, that takes you back. Perfect. Yes. So a few, many years ago, probably 2009, I think it was, Pastor Jamie Allen had begun a prayer thing on Wednesdays at noon downtown where they were just praying for Dixon. He and his wife, Diane, had started the National Day of Prayer in Dixon, and where they do 24 hours of prayer and worship at the, on the National Day of Prayer. They team up churches with different nonprofits to be able to pray with them. And out of that came a smaller group, out of the Wednesday group, that goes out on Tuesdays, because he felt like, you know, these folks need prayer more than just once a year. We really yeah. need to be there. And the cool thing is that Chris Russell from CareNet had said, we have been praying for prayer teams to come in. Mm. And so it all kind of came together at that time. There were about five of us that started going around to CareNet, the Help Center, the Jail Chaplaincy, Child Advocacy Center. We ended up at the police station, the school yeah. board, you know, yeah. just different places at different times, Habitat, the YMCA, mm-hmm. just to pray with the leaders for what God was doing in the community. And so that's what I was doing on my Tuesdays while working Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at
DMA. Literally, y'all would drive from spot to spot mm-hmm. and pray over the staff, the volunteers, the clients. Mm-hmm. Most of these locations had a place where people could leave prayer requests for you guys.
Yeah.
The staff sometimes would come in and share that time of prayer. Sometimes they wouldn't, but you'd be there and you'd just pray.
Absolutely. And it was such a sweet perspective to get to see in Dixon the answers to prayer, the miraculous things that God has done through these ministries that are the hands and feet of Jesus, and just to see what he will do with surrendered lives to build things in our community, and then also to see the camaraderie between the nonprofits.
Yes.
It's just amazing. Like, I don't know that, you know, you hear from other people that come from different counties, they're like, this is a unique thing that the nonprofits love on each other and work together and support each other. And I'm just, I don't know, it's just beautiful. And to really to see the miracles. Like, I remember sitting in the with the prayer team in Paul's office for the YMCA when it was at the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, before, like, blueprints being laid out on the table.
Yeah.
You know? And it looked like this plan wasn't going to work. And when impossibilities came up.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, to pray through that with him. And I'm sure he had many other people praying as well. And then, you know, 6 months later or whatever, to walk into the YMCA when there's conduit and wires hanging from the ceiling and just metal posts and concrete and nothing, you know.
It's still a Kmart at this point.
Right, it was Kmart, yep. And just to see, you know, God is like, if he wants it to happen, it can happen. I think that was part of my preparation, really, because I don't know, had I not seen that, if I'd have had the guts.
Yeah.
You know, to be doing
it. It is neat how God sometimes, I feel like sometimes he'll dramatically answer a few prayers in a row just to kind of remind you, I can.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So as a minister in town, one of the things that I love first and foremost, what you do on the prayer team, the fact that you pray and you do this, but a secondary piece of that, you send out a report each Tuesday when you do this, and the ministry fellowship gets, I think, CC'd on it. I don't actually know how I start getting those emails, but I get those emails. And usually on a Tuesday evening, I kind of get a report of the prayer needs for the charities in Dixon. And it's great to spend a few minutes. It multiplies what you do because you give me things to pray for.
That was another thing. You know, Pastor Jamie's great about dropping ideas. Let's do this or whatever. And so that was something that he suggested that we send that out to the ministerial fellowship. And I've since probably in the past couple of months had to pass that on to someone else because of my responsibilities with Kinsmen. But I think it really does when you can look at it on one sheet of paper and you can see what God is doing in all those different ministries throughout. And then to invest prayer and then a couple of months later to see, okay, the Lord, that was resolved and answered in this way. It's very faith building.
That list, you know, it might say someone at the police department has a sprained ankle.
Right.
And it might say CareNet's thinking about expanding to take over the county of Dixon. Like, you know, it can be, I hate to say little or big because nothing's little to the person experiencing it, but you know what I mean.
It's
a neat reminder. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's prayer team.
Yes. That's the prayer team. Love them.
Prayer team leads us to Kinsmen. Let's go back to that spot.
Okay. So to that spot. So, well, actually on the prayer team, one of our originals, sweet B. George, I love her. If you know her, you love her. She's a prayer warrior in Dixon. She's in her 90s now, and she's been a sweet mama to me. And so, and she adores Pastor Jamie, and she always has. And so she would come in and talk to us on Tuesdays about what Jamie was doing at their church, Church of Living Water, how they were beginning, at the very beginning, they were like collecting leftovers and you know, going out and serving the few people that they knew of in Dixon that were homeless. And she kept saying, you know, when somebody's trying to nudge you, especially a mother in the faith, a little bit. And she kept mentioning it, and it just kept rolling in my mind. And I have a brother who was deals with mental illness. And so at one point, or at some different points in his life, he's been homeless. And so it's always been kind of a thing in my heart to serve. So anyway, I just felt like, you know what, I can go in on a Monday and slip in a casserole.
Yeah.
In and out.
Yeah.
That's because that's how you start, right?
Right. That's how they get you.
Yeah. So it was a wonderful thing. So I went in on Monday, started bringing a casserole, and there was a lady that was there, and she, a couple of ladies actually, who had actually were homeless. Yeah. And they were the ones that were helping putting the meals together and stuff, but they were both disabled.
Yeah.
And we were serving, I think, maybe 20, 25 people at the time. So they were taking whoever's leftovers or what anybody brought and dropped by, and they were
just figuring it out.
Yeah, figuring out, putting it in a, actually, we were doing like butter bowls, you know, plastic bowls at that time, and just putting things together to send out. And I thought, man, these ladies are, this is hard for them. They need some help. And I thought, you know, I can probably talk to a few ladies at my church, and we can probably take care of Monday and do like a whole meal, you know, because it's only 20, 25 people. So we started doing that, made a team, and we're like, hey, we'll take Mondays. Not long after that, it was like we were serving 25 people. And then it was, you know, like all of a sudden it was 35 people. And then it was 60 people. And I was like, you know.
Surprise.
We need some help. And so because of the prayer team and really some contacts that I had been able to make, you know, in the community, started reaching out and saying to people, look, this is what we're doing. Would you like to be involved? Also, other people were just hearing about it. However, you know, how word just spreads. And they were calling Pastor Jamie and saying, you know, how can we help? And so we started to get organized from there and doing cooking teams and then plating teams. And it just started to grow from there. And now we have several, probably 8 or 9 different kinds of teams that are serving. Yeah.
So what are those teams?
Yeah. So we did the cooking team. So we have people that sign up to get a menu, and they respond like on a group text, or group me is what we use.
Yeah.
What they want to contribute. So that's our cooking team. We have a couple of drivers that go out in Dixon. They pick up the food on Mondays and Thursdays. So that's our driving team. We've got the plating team. So they show up on a Monday and Thursday, and they take all the food that's been provided, put it in a plate, pack it in the coolers, get it ready to send out.
Yeah.
We have a delivery team. So our delivery team meets at the YMCA. We get together and pray together. We have a list of folks that we're going to visit. And so they will divide up the list, go out in teams, and serve people where they are in their cars, tents, campers, hotels, just around town. They'll go and serve them there, pray with them, do an intake on them, find out what their needs are. And then we have a connections team who follows up from there. Now, our connections team are like, they're like, you know, they are amazing. Right now, they're mostly women, retired women right now. We have a couple of men on that team. But mostly, like the load of it is on a few, like maybe five women who are really helping them to overcome obstacles. So say somebody needs to go to the doctor, but they don't have insurance. So they're helping them to figure out, how do I get signed up with 10 care, Medicare, those kinds of things. They lost their driver's license because they were sleeping in a tent, you know, or they just laid it down somewhere. Or
yeah.
Their important papers got ruined, you know. They'll help them get their driver's license, social security cards, get signed up for disability if they need it, get connected to mental health services. The help center is wonderful. Mm-hmm. They will allow them to use their office space to come in and do a needs assessment.
Okay.
So they'll ask them more about, you know, what are your needs, and try to find out what services they might be eligible for too, that we can get them connected with. They're the ones that get the call in the middle of the night, you know, hey, my tent's flooded, what do I do? Mm. You know, they're the ones that get that call in the middle of the night. Look, I lost my mom, you know. Mm. They're the ones that are really just really walking alongside people. They're my heroes.
Yeah. And, you know, people talk a lot about homelessness, and there's a lot of, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because there's some stigma. Mm-hmm. There's mental health issues that mm-hmm. come along with it. There's substance abuse issues mm-hmm. that come along with it. There's a hot mess. And then mm-hmm. there's a fair amount of not in my backyard type stuff mm-hmm. that's like, you can be homeless, but not here.
Yeah.
And then everybody says that, and then that's a thing. And then there's some public safety and public health. Like, this is a complicated issue.
For sure.
But I really love hearing about this connections team, because that's the stuff that changes, you mm-hmm. know. A meal is a Band-Aid, mm-hmm. but don't get me wrong, it's a really important Band-Aid.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not putting it down, but these connections people are doing stuff that can be game-changing, community-changing.
Absolutely. Yeah, we always say the meal is the first evidence of love. You know what I'm saying? Like, it opens the door for us to have a conversation. Like, you really care about me. And people are really, I mean, I've stood in parking lots where you're trying to have a conversation with somebody and they're devouring their meal, you know, because they're hungry.
Yeah.
And it's so, it is so important. But it gives us that open door to, now how can we help you not just get your belly full, but move forward from this? We had our banquet March 9th. And in kind of preparing for that, I came across this beautiful story in the Midrash. And it was talking about, like, the burning bush, right? And so in the Midrash, they were talking about, you know, why would the Lord, the Most High God, show up in this burning bush, the lowliest of bushes, and they called it a thorn bush.
Okay.
And they said it was because what happens when a bird comes into this thorn bush, like, the bird is just minding its business, right? Trying to find a place to rest. The bird lands in the thorn bush, but it can't get out on its own.
Yeah.
Like, if it tries to escape on its own, it's going to tear itself limb from limb because of the nature of those thorns are so huge. And so they, in the Midrash, they were saying it was God showing that, you know, was concerned about those who were in slavery in Egypt. And he was going to be the one to come and rescue them out of that because he knew that they could not get out of it on their own.
Yeah.
And so that's what we want to do. We want to, there is a place in poverty where you're not going to pull out of it on your own.
Right.
You've got to have somebody to come alongside you.
Well, the bootstraps is a myth.
Yeah.
You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's mm-hmm. cute. Nobody does that. Nobody can do that because where'd you get the boots?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things we do see, we see the mentally ill. We see the substance abuse. A lot of that comes from trauma, mm-hmm. family trauma. They don't, not all of them, but a lot of them don't have a good family support. That's not always the case because even in my family, you know, my brother, he would have had all of the support. But sometimes families can't help because it's not received from families. So there needs to be somebody else that will come along that they can receive from. And so sometimes that's us. But one of the things that was most surprising to me was the amount of elderly disabled that just what they were making with disability benefits is not enough to, in reality, pay their rent and their medical bills. It just wasn't. And then if they don't have family support, you know, it's very sad to see an elderly woman or man in a vehicle living out there because they just cannot afford it. And we came across that a lot more than I expected. So it's a variety of issues, that we find out there that people are facing. And I always tell people, it is the most humbling thing mm-hmm. to stand in front of somebody that needs everything and to, presume I've got an answer for you. Because like you said, it's so complicated.
Yeah.
Everybody's story is different.
And I think there's a lot of fear because a person who lives in a tent doesn't act like or smell like mm-hmm. or dress like most of the people who come to church on Sunday.
Yeah.
So there's and knowing how many have substance abuse, mental health issues, I think a lot of people are scared to do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you run into that problem? Is that a...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we try to be wise. We do our best to, you know, have groups and teams that go out. We try to be aware of who it is we're serving. But at some point, you do have to kind of throw caution to the wind a little bit. There are a few people, I mean, unless someone, you know, puts them in their car and takes them to the Social Security office, unless somebody does that, they're not going to get there.
Yeah.
You know, they can't walk it. It's in Clarksville, you know.
And I think the fear is drummed up mm-hmm. from what you see on television.
Yes.
You know, I think there's just this myth that people think that homeless person's going to murder me or something.
Yeah.
Like that they're not. Just like the other people in Walmart aren't going to. Yeah, you know, I don't want my daughter going there. She's 8.
Yeah.
By herself.
Yes, correct.
But, like, I don't know. We let fear and what if keep us from doing way too much stuff.
Absolutely. And how did Jesus do ministry?
Yeah.
Really, if we put that barrier, if we allow that to be, we can, you know, what kind of lost people are we after?
Yeah.
You know, is there a certain kind of lost people that
yes, we're
are
after
beyond
the well-dressed, nice ones? We want the ones who will donate to church. That's
yes,
what we want.
Exactly. So. Right. Are we going to, even in our churches, are we going to be too cautious with that kind of lost person?
Yeah.
You know, or even, like you said, that not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why I say our connections team is my heroes. They are like those Good Samaritans mm-hmm. that will say, you know, what if I do get hurt? If I get hurt doing God's business, have I really lost? I mean, you think about our missionaries and the things that they're doing. That really is what this is like. It's like, it's home-based missions.
Mm. Say that again. If I get hurt doing God's business,
Have I really lost
anything? Lost anything?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think we need to live on that idea a little bit more. I mean, I get responsibility and prudence and wisdom. I'm for all the, I know you are too. Mm-hmm. But we can't just be paralyzed by what could go wrong. That's not a Christian virtue.
Right.
One of my key verses I camp out on, 2 Timothy 1:7, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and self-control. We're not chicken little people.
Yeah.
We are more than conquerors. So let's act like it.
Absolutely.
You know. So talk to me a little bit about homelessness in Dixon. You know, you go to Nashville, you go downtown, and every intersection, you'll see somebody selling a newspaper, you'll see people sleeping on a park bench. You know, you see the big homeless encampments in Nashville. There was the one behind Lowe's and Walmart on Charlotte that was all over the news. You know, in Dixon, I drive all over Dixon all the time. You'll see one person with a cardboard sign, maybe two. So it's really easy for people to think that there aren't homeless people in Dixon.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not the case. Yeah. So tell me what the case is.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, to go back to kind of the beginning of Kinsmen, so Pastor Jamie and was working Uber and Lyft.
Okay.
And he was going to Nashville.
Yeah.
And he was, he would see that everywhere he went. And so he told Diane, he was like, I can't not do something. So
yeah.
They started packing up like a sandwich and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and an apple and a bag of chips and some water or whatever. Yeah. And whenever he would see someone, he would ask the person he was, you know, transporting, hey, do you mind if I stop and give this person some food? And he said, nobody ever said no.
Yeah.
And so he would stop and give them some food and just talk to them for a minute. And then he got a call from somebody who had met a man who was staying in his vehicle at one of the local parking lots.
Yeah.
And it was going to be cold. It's going to be very cold.
Yeah.
And he called Jamie and said, hey, I heard about what you're doing. Is there any way you can help this person? And he said, you know, I need to help people in my own town. And started serving this guy. Actually, at that time, they don't do this anymore. But at that time, he just invited the guy to stay in his church because he didn't know what else to do as far as to help him to keep from getting, you know, from freezing.
Frostbite.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Made a relationship with him and asked him, hey, do you know anybody else that's like you out here? And he was like, oh, yeah, there's a lady over here. There's a guy in the woods over here. There's that's how we started making our connections. But as far as what does homelessness look like here? A lot of our people work. We have people that are working in restaurants. We have people that are working in factories. We have people living in hotels, which is still homelessness because that is not, by the state of Tennessee's definition, because it's not a permanent
place have an address. To live.
Yeah, absolutely. And so our folks that get kind of caught in the hotel system, so they are paying more. My husband and I have paid off our house now, but before then, they were paying more a month than our mortgage was.
Yeah.
Because once you add up what you pay weekly, it's like, I don't know, I want to say it's like $1,200. I'm not sure if that's right or not, something around there.
Oh, and it's gotten worse and worse over these last few years, you know.
Absolutely.
Used to, it wasn't that hard to put somebody up in a hotel that was okay for $50 in a night.
Yeah.
That's getting way harder to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So they kind of get trapped in that hotel system. They are afraid to be in their car or their tent in order to save up the money or whatever. And then we have our people that, you know, something catastrophic has happened with their health, with the place that they were staying. You know, they had an altercation or they had something go on with their landlord or whoever they were living with.
Sometimes there's a domestic and you can't live where where the person who hurt you was.
Yes.
And even on the other side of that, if you're accused of a domestic, you can't be where you're. I mean, so somebody's got to live somewhere else.
Yep. Yeah. That kind of thing happens all the time. Just, you know, one, like we had have a girl right now who is in a tent. She's been doing awesome. We're so proud of her. She's been working at a local factory. She came in as a temp, moved up to a management position. She's trying to save up to get a place to live. Well, then she breaks her hand and she's mandatory. They say you have to take off this amount of time. And it just like throws you back, you know. I mean, but things like that happen with people, and
if you have any predisposed whatever to substance abuse or mental health issues, you know, anybody's going to have a hard time with that. Let's say that you have major depressive disorder or bipolar. Let's say that you've been sober 60 days and that happens. Mm-hmm. Wow, now I have time and sadness and isolation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the recipe for relapse. This stuff kills people.
Absolutely, for sure. And even our, one of our sweet ladies from the beginning, she was working a great job. She was working on computers, had worked on computers all her life. I think she worked in medical collections or something like that, and had a stroke.
Ugh.
And so she couldn't see out of one of her eyes. She had congestive heart failure. She kept having heart attacks. All of these things were happening. It's like she could not work anymore.
Yeah.
And she was already working paycheck to, or living paycheck to paycheck.
And then she loses that.
Right.
Didn't have family support. And now she got some ER bills. She's got, you know.
Absolutely. Was living in her van, you know, for a long time. It took us a long time to find a little better situation for her. So
I don't mean to be too specific here for privacy's sake, but where are homeless people in Dixon?
We get that question all of the time. And really, they're kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
They're in the hotels. They're in their vehicles, and then they're in their tents. And there's not like, you know, there used to be this idea that there was a tent city.
Yeah.
And that really is not so much people, because when people are discovered, they're often asked to move. It's again that not
Tennessee
in my backyard.
Changed some laws in the last
Absolutely.
Couple of years to basically make
it's a felony.
A felony to be felony. Camping on public land without approval.
Yes.
Rather than this being trespassing, let's move. I mean, I don't want to be political here, but that law is idiotic and unjust.
Well, the thing that makes that difficult is now you have a felony on your record. So when you try to get an apartment, you're going to be the first one that's passed by.
By definition, this is making the problem worse. I'm not
Agreed.
Saying that people should be able to sleep on anybody's land. I think there's some. I think there's a reason we should have some trespassing laws. I'm okay with that. Don't misread me, but this criminalizing to the degree of felony is
right.
I think our legislature ought to be ashamed of that.
That has made it. It has made it very difficult. It's caused a lot of fear for our folks, and honestly, our people don't. They don't want to be where they need to be, where they can walk to things.
Yeah.
But they don't want to be out in the open. They don't want to be where they're not wanted, and they know it, because they understand that that means I have to uproot my life. Even if I have to go to work today, I've got to make sure my tent and all of my belongings are
down and hidden. And
yes, because if I get arrested, I lose all of my things that I've got in this tent. So most of them, you know, they don't want to be a nuisance to anyone, because they don't want to be uprooted.
It's just so hard.
Yeah. And then with the mental health issues and we have had several people battling cancer. Like even, you know, one of the places that we would go and pray with is a Dixon Community Clinic.
Yeah.
And I remember them telling us one time, you know, people don't come here until they're very, very sick, because they can't afford medical care. So they don't get it. And so by the time they walk through their doors, they're very, very, you know, they've got cancer, they've got uncontrolled diabetes, you know, blood clots, you know, all of those difficult things. And that a lot of times is a part of the homeless situation too. They don't have regular medical care, so they end up very ill in some cases.
It's miserable enough, you know, for you and me, if I go on vacation and I get a man cold. You know, it's no fun. Leslie and I were doing a study abroad course a year or two ago, and I finally got COVID. I got COVID overseas.
Oh, no.
And it was just miserable, because, you know, you can't buy your brand of, you know, you have your Mucinex and your Tylenol and your Benadryl. And you know, you can't find the stuff. Imagine what it's like to be dealing with the effects of chemo.
Oh, yeah.
And sleeping in a sleeping bag outside.
Yeah, for sure. And to have to get to your daily radiation treatments. That's one of the other things our connections team has done too. Like, we've had people who've needed to be at their appointments every day, and so they will go and pick them up, make sure they get there. And then you think, okay, like you said, I'm dealing with those effects, but there's not a bathroom nearby if I'm nauseous or, you know, whatever.
I can go puke on that tree.
Exactly, by myself. And then we had, you know, one guy with mobility issues. Like, he could barely walk, and then he's also having radiation. And it's just, you know, it's hard out there for folks.
I think people sometimes talk, again, about homeless almost with a moral judgment. you know, well, there's some people who just don't want to work, and there's some people who don't, they like it this way. Mm-hmm. And while I'm sure that there is some percentage of people who are wired weird or something, you know, you, when you meet people, you find out trauma,
yeah,
generational trauma, mm-hmm, parents didn't show any other way. Yeah. You know, a brain that's cooked by drugs, mm-hmm, still is in a body and a soul that belongs to someone that Jesus loves. That's just true. Because I did something dumb in the 70s doesn't mean I need to, it shouldn't be a capital punishment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we, and, you know, I also think we do come across, that is like rare. I could probably say two or three people,
yeah,
four people maybe, that are like, this is the way I live, you, yeah, know? But even that, I think, is just a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. Like at some point they were like, I'm just going to make peace with this is the way life is.
And the way for me. The reason I bring that up is, you know, if I talk about this in a class at church, and this church, any other church I've ever, mm-hmm, been to, somebody's going to say, well, some people just like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure, but we're talking 99% don't.
Right.
You know, or whatever.
Right.
Don't let the bad apple ruin the bushel for you.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's lack of choices. Like, I'm going to decide to make the best of it.
Yeah. And, you know, being poor is expensive. I saw this presentation a while back. It said, you know, when I buy toilet paper, I get it at Costco. And I get a good deal for 4,000 rolls or whatever it is that you buy, you know. And when I buy chicken, I buy a 5-pound bag of frozen boneless, right, skinless chicken breast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gas prices went up today. I'm going to wait to fill up my tank.
Yeah.
Because I can afford to put a full tank of gas in my truck. Mm-hmm. But if everything you do in life is at the Dollar General and the gas station,
yeah,
you know, if all of your calories come from gas station chicken biscuits,
mm-hmm,
well, those aren't healthy choices. Well, great. What do you think they were going to do? Put it in the refrigerator that's, right, plugged into their tent?
Right.
I mean, what? Yeah. If you've never done one of the poverty simulations, there's several good ones. UT Extension does it.
Yeah, I think they do.
It's a really good program.
Yeah, I've been working during those, but I'm going to have to take next year off or something.
Yeah, you got to go. You got to go.
I do need to go. But yeah, and even like, that's one of the things we run into in the wintertime. People use their gas for heat, mm-hmm, like in their car. That's, yeah, how they stay warm. And so, you know, we are filling up gas tanks a lot during the wintertime.
And I mean, even that brings with it the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning. Sure. I mean, how many times in Nashville do you hear that story of, mm-hmm, a family dying that way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just, ugh.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Yes.
Talk to me about the name of the organization, Kinsman Redeemer.
Yes. So Kinsman Redeemer, that's something that is just the Lord laid on Pastor Jamie's heart, you know. Our verse that we have kind of underneath our logo is, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name and you are mine.
Yeah.
And so it's that sense that the Lord truly has called us. You know, I can just, the way it feels to me is that, you know, when I begin to have that tug into this ministry, seeing all the things that the Lord has been doing in Dixon, and there being that, there have been other wonderful groups who have kind of,
yeah,
been out there too, and we, God bless them. But for us, it was just like, you know, there's this group that you could just feel the Lord's heart on them. You, yeah, could feel that draw, like that he wanted to go after this group that was the least, the unseen, the, you know, the difficult,
yeah,
the easily rejected, kind of folks. And we really have always felt like we are just chasing Jesus' heart.
Mm.
Out into the dark and the hard places. The desire of his heart is to show his goodness, to let them know that he sees them. He knows where they're at. He knows what their needs are. They're not forgotten. They're not invisible, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how it's always felt to me. Like he wants to be that kinsman redeemer, that one, yeah, comes alongside and says, I will match myself with you. I will, yeah, put myself with you and walk alongside you and bring you to a better place.
That's so, super cool.
Yeah,
that's a great name. Cool. Okay. Wasn't there a story where when y'all started setting up your website, if you Googled you helpful group or something. Was that a thing? Do I remember that?
Yes, you do.
Wasn't it like a racist group or something?
Oh, yes. So if you Google Kinsman Redeemer, it's K-I-N-S-M-A-N, by the way, Kinsman Redeemer, and you get something different. We are not a white supremacist dating group, I promise.
it was a dating group? Was it really?
Which is so weird to me, because if you look
at... What a name.
I know, because in the Book of Ruth, where the Kinsman Redeemer is most talked about, like, that was an interracial couple. Boaz and Ruth were...
Oh, that's beautifully ironic.
And I'm like, what?
Racists do really dumb stuff. I mean, you know, it just...
Yeah, so we love every shade of people. We know that God is creative and he loves variety. And so, that wasn't us.
Good grief. You know, nothing's easy. Nothing's easy.
For sure.
But you know how cool the story's been? Because, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, y'all had an MBA put together a business plan of how to launch a charity. It was, hey, we had some leftover food. Let's do something with it.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't you bring some food on Monday? Yeah. Hey, because y'all do, you said you do feedings on
Monday and Thursday.
Monday and Thursday. Yes. And you have teams cook, you do your deliveries, the connections things happening every day of the week.
All the time. Yep.
And I see cars, you have a magnet on your car, and I see some others that have these magnets on them that are your delivery people and your connections people. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an older guy at our church. He's been passed away for a couple of years now. His name was Keith Oliver. One of the things that he liked to say is, I can't do as much as I used to, but I can still drive.
Oh, yeah.
And so the number of people that he drove from the jail to the bus station or from a rehab to their family or whatever was, you know, you don't underestimate how important that gift is. And what's cool is, I mean, you have described something where there are a whole bunch of different gifted sets of giftedness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you probably don't want me running the cooking team. I can cook in bulk, but there was a time I made chili for the church that didn't turn out so good. That's a story for another day. But, you know, anybody can plate.
Yeah.
You know, I can plate. I can drive. I could deliver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could probably do the connections thing. Time would be my limiting factor.
Yeah.
You know, there's a place in, you know, finding a place in ministry. There's a diversity of gifts, but one spirit, right?
Absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we have a sorting team, so we have lots of donations that come in, and so that is a perfect place. A lot of times we'll have, you know, people will call and, how can my high school student get, you know, volunteer hours? Well, the plating team, sorting team is perfect for them. We have peanut butter and jelly sandwich makers, because we do 440 a week.
Wow.
Peanut butter. That's a lot of peanut butter.
Yes, it is.
So we've got teams that do that. And we have an evangelist team. So, you know, on a Thursday, Pastor Jamie and a couple guys, or, you know, one other gentleman and his daughter are right now, we'll ask the Lord, okay, who is it that you want us to spend time with? They'll take somebody out to and say, hey, what's your favorite restaurant in Dixon?
Oh, how cool.
Sit down with them and really hear their story.
Yeah.
And, you know, how did this happen? Where are you at? And they'll talk about, you know, what traumatized them and the different things, really let them, and then find out where God was at for them in that time. And then walk them through the process of, did you see God through those moments?
Yeah.
And, you know, do you know God? Like, do you know what God has offered to you in the gospel of Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
And really make sure they have a good understanding. Because I think in America, we all think we know what Jesus did, but do we know Jesus? You know?
Hey, in the jail ministry, a lot of times when I walk in for we call it doing church, I'll say, what do you guys want to talk about today? And not many years ago, somebody said, you know, I know it's nearly Christmas. I don't think I know the story about how Jesus was born.
Wow.
And so like I got to talk to a guy and tell him the story of the birth of Jesus. I mean, it felt like the Charlie Brown Christmas special, you know, like, awesome. You know, it was just so cool. But, you know, you think everybody in Dixon knows. No, they don't.
And, you know, I think, too, one of the things, like, we did a volunteer delivery team training. Like, everybody we're starting now that everybody needs to go through orientation and we need to sit down and talk to them about stuff. And I, you know, one of the things I told them is we don't ever want to get people to that point where, or we're just saying, hey, are you a Christian? And they say, oh, yeah. Because they want, you know, a lot of times their mind is focused on that food. Like, give me the food and stop this conversation and we'll move on.
Whatever I have to say to get food.
Exactly. And we don't ever want to be that way. If we want to talk to them about the Lord, We want to pray with them. But if they're getting close to, like, we don't ever want to just pray the prayer of salvation. We want, just because that, how do I want to say this? We want to make sure they have a good understanding. And rather than them saying, oh, yeah, sure, I'll pray the prayer. If they are at that point and we feel like in our spirit, okay, they don't have a good understanding of that, or maybe they're not really at that point of surrender yet. Yeah. I told them, don't pray that prayer with them yet.
No.
Let's walk with them with that for a little while. Let's talk to them about Jesus, because we don't want anybody to have a false sense of security and then stand before the Lord and him to say, I never knew you.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be our recipients or
us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I feel at the church camps I've been involved with. Mm-hmm. Several of them had the tradition where they would have altar calls basically at every service. And I worked to get rid of most of those, and people got mad at me.
Yeah.
And, oh, you don't want these kids to be saved? No, that's actually, I want them to be saved. It's,
yeah.
That's why I'm not doing this, because, you know, you keep a kid up till 11 o'clock, four nights of church camp, turn off the lights, sing the right song, and tell them the right sad story. You can baptize every kid in camp twice.
Yeah.
I don't want this to be manipulative.
Yes.
I want this to be meaningful.
Yeah.
I'm not against emotion. Emotion's powerful, evocative. Mm-hmm. God invented it for a reason. But too many minister types have been manipulative, and that doesn't help anybody. I don't want to manipulate you into the gospel.
Yeah.
I want you to come when you're ready.
Yeah.
And I don't need to rush that. I don't need to jam it down your throat.
Yeah. Because in the end, the Holy Spirit
is
the
job.
Only one that can draw people into salvation.
Yeah.
And so we have to learn to stop. And we get so results, I think, oriented. Like we've got to have this end result, or we're not effective.
Yeah.
Well, that's up to God to decide. You know, let's follow the Holy Spirit.
I planted, Apollos watered, God gives the increase.
Absolutely.
So if you want to keep track of anything, keep track of how much planting you do, but I wouldn't keep track of that either.
Yeah.
Let God take care of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So we don't ever want to kind of jump the gun in that. We want to walk through that and listen. That is one of the things I pray most of the time, Lord. We want to be led by the Holy Spirit. Like, Pastor Jamie always says, and this is so true of us, like our, you know, life verse for our ministry is that thing where it says, you know, not many of you are wise, not many of you are noble, you know, but God takes the foolish things of this earth to confound the wise. And we're like, we're in. You know?
We're God's idiots.
Like, we qualify. Great.
I had a,
we definitely, like you were talking about, we did not have a business plan. We are just out there learning as we go and trying to hear the wisdom of the Spirit and follow the Lord.
So. Yeah. I had a professor, he used to sign his emails, Theo Raka, Theo God. Raka was that word Jesus said, you know, don't call anyone a Raka.
Oh, yeah.
A fool.
Yeah.
He said, I want to be known as God's fool.
Yeah.
I thought that's kind of a cool.
Yeah, we're going to have t-shirts made.
I don't know if I've been the Theo part, but I've been the Raka part, you know, got half of that down pretty well. Okay, so pretty much all we've talked about is kinsmen, and I had no idea today whether we're going to tell your story or kinsmen's. Oh, yeah. Do you want to do some of your story?
I sure can.
Yeah. It's up to you. You're in charge here. Absolutely. I'm just sitting here in front of a microphone.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So how did I come to know Jesus? Well, how about that?
Yeah. Seems significant.
Seems very significant. So, grew up in church. I lived in, was born in Indiana, moved to Spartanburg, South Carolina. That's where, you know, most of my growing up was. I went to a Methodist church growing up. Great people, youth group, you know, youth camp, all the stuff. Probably I would say, you know, my late teens, actually, so I mentioned my older brother, couple different diagnoses. He's had bipolar with psychotic tendencies or schizophrenic. So he was 8 years older than me. And so that was a dynamic in the home, as you can imagine.
That was a dynamic.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, there were times when that was, to put it lightly, it was very difficult for the parents, difficult for me as a sister, 8 years, you know, younger than him. He was like a different person when my dad was home or when my mom and I were home. It was just, we were kind of vulnerable in that situation. And so There came a time where mom and dad were dealing a lot with that, and he had to be hospitalized and some other things. And so I think at that time I kind of took a left turn, you know, away from the Lord and began to kind of do things my own way. Long story short, ended up as a single mom. Found myself, okay, now I am pregnant and it's just me, and I'm already working two jobs and not making ends meet. What am I going to do?
Yeah. This is about to get easier.
Exactly. Like, that was the first time where, like, okay, I cannot handle things. You know, this is over my head. And in that time, I had been, like I said, working two jobs, trying to figure out things, realizing I can't make ends meet. Like, once I have this child, I can't work two jobs.
Yeah.
With a newborn as a single mom. That's not going to be fair to her. And so my dad ended up getting transferred to Dixon to Queb Corps.
Okay.
A factory in town. And I moved from Spartanburg here.
Okay.
Started working at Dr. Gordon's office. Yep. As a receptionist. And
she's not my pediatrician, okay? That's not that.
Yeah. So started working there and met a sweet lady named Jane Philbrick. And she was Dr. Cook's nurse, if anybody remembers Dr. Cook. And she would just talk about Jesus like he was a real person. Like, she would be like, I was reading and I was discussing, you know, in her prayer time, she would be like talking about how Jesus and her were having like this real discussion. I thought, she is crazy or she knows something, like, I don't know, you know. And that started to just be like a draw for me. She gave me a Bible, took me to church with her at Jason Chapel's, where I used to go. And really just, I mean, sincerely, we were friends, you know, and she really, truly loved me. And I thought, I could just, God, started seeing things in her life. And I was like, that I wanted, you know?
Yeah.
At the same time, began to open up the Word. And at this time, I'm a single mom. My daughter is, we moved in with my parents here. My daughter was 5 or 6 months old, you know, and I'm realizing, okay, I brought this kid into the world. She has no father. What have I done, to this child, you know? So I start reading the Word, and I get to that story. Okay, now I'm going to cry.
It's okay.
You know, you get to that story in Luke where the woman busts into the house of the Pharisees. And I'd already decided I wasn't church people anymore,
yeah,
you know, because of the life I had lived. I was like, I can't go back to church. Jane was asking me, and I was like, I can't do it, you know. Yeah. I'd already decided that, you know, if I go in there, I'm not going to be accepted.
Yeah.
Which was not true, by the way.
Right. Spoiler.
Right. Spoiler alert. That was not true. So here in the story, this woman busts into this room of Pharisees, and she just opens up her alabaster jar. That's everything she has. And she pours this worship out on Jesus. And he doesn't say to her, you know, he doesn't turn away in disgust. It's the first time, even though I'd been growing up in church, that I really saw his, reading through the Gospels in that period of time, his compassion for people, his real love for people, that he wasn't at all who I thought he was. He was not, he didn't have his nose in the air. He wasn't rejecting. He wasn't.
He didn't walk 6 inches off the ground. He didn't float. He didn't.
Yeah, he loved people, and he accepted people where they were at and had real love for them, and just really began to experience the love of Jesus. About that same time, I had a dream. And in this dream, I am walking along with this man, and he was bearded, but he was like in jeans and a jean jacket.
Okay. And we're oddly specific.
Yes, it was very weird. So we're walking along this river side, and I could tell it was probably summer, probably 6 or 7 o'clock at night, like the sun was getting ready to set, you know. And we come up on this beautiful white dock, and I just remember in this dream walking alongside this person and thinking, I've never experienced love like this before. Like there was that conversation. He was not only just talking, but he was listening to what I was saying. And he truly cared. And we were walking along and we sit on this, you know how on some fishing piers, like when they're wooden, they have that little corner seat. Oh, yeah, they've got like a seat, then they've got a corner there.
Yeah.
And so he sits down on the corner and he throws his arm up. And I remember sitting kind of underneath the crook of his arm in the stream. And I remember just having this heart-to-heart conversation with him. And then I looked up and there's all these people and they're like having a great time. It was almost like a church cookout, you know, beachside kind of thing. People running around in their bathing suits and having fun. It was just like a kid, kids having fun. Yeah. And my thought was, I was aware that there was going to be a boat that was going to come along for some reason. And these people were going to get on this boat and they were going to go. And that's what they were waiting for. And we were sitting there talking and I wasn't dressed that way. And I just remember thinking in my mind, am I going to get on this boat, you know, in this river? And another friend from work who had been witnessing to me walked by. And I remember that this person that I was talking to looked at her and his face just exploded in light, bright like sunlight. And he just said, God loves Jackie King, you know, and it was so, I was like, oh, because he saw one of his children playing and he was just taken by how much love there was for her. And I remember looking at him and thinking, well, what about me? Mm. You know, and at that moment, it wasn't a, what about me? Do you love me? It was, what about me? Am I getting on the boat? Just to be clear.
Okay.
And light from his face just kind of went back and it was like he was a person again. And for the first time in that conversation, and remember, I don't know my Bible at this point. I noticed he had scars on his face. And he just looked at me with the most serious and compassionate look, like, you need to contemplate that question. Like, are you getting on this boat? Right. And so I woke up from this dream thinking, wow, I really need, like, I had never
on that boat.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd never experienced that love. Yeah. And I remember it was not in that some period of time, it wasn't that same night, but in that same period of time, it was like I just gave up. And I was like, okay, if you are real, like, I need to know for myself. Like, I know Jane talks to you and she thinks you're real.
Yeah.
You
know? But I need to know.
But I need to know for myself. For exactly. Yeah. Are you real? And I remember that was the first time, like, the real presence of God just came in my room that night. And I was aware of two very extraordinarily real things. That God was holy. There was this overwhelming sense of his holiness. But at the same time with it, there was this overwhelming sense of his love.
Yeah.
That same love that I'd walked with in that dream. But with his holiness, I realized, oh, he is holy and I am not. And I have a serious issue right now.
Yeah.
And it was almost not to be irreverent or anything, but it was almost like a proposal.
Yeah.
It was like the Lord's presence was there saying, you know, will you be mine?
Yeah.
And the answer was yes, and I have fallen in love with Jesus, and I've been in love with Jesus ever since. I've wrecked a whole ton of things on the way. You know, I've messed up a million times and learned a lot of things about who he is, but he has been faithful to remind me I'm his bride. I'm his beloved. And it's just, I've never gotten over him.
Yeah.
I hope to never get over him.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, and that is why, again, every day we get up and continue to do what we do. It's because it's not, we're not doing this for a person.
Yeah.
Not, you know, I love my leadership that I've been under with.
Yeah, they're great.
The Kinsmen, they're fantastic. And I love the people we serve, but even that, we don't do it for them.
No.
It's because you know, he has my yes. Yeah. And what else can I do?
He has my yes.
Follow. You have to follow. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
He's awesome.
It's funny. Your dream to me kind of parallels the call of Isaiah in Isaiah 6, where he's in this throne room scene and he sees all of these things. And his takeaway, you know, he falls down. He says, woe is me. I am a man of unclean lips among a people of unclean lips. And then there's that weird scene next where he takes a hot coal and sears him to remove what was unholy and fits him to his service.
Yeah.
You know, yours was the Message version of that. You know, right. It's the 2024 version of that or whatever year that was. God does powerful things. We don't pay nearly enough attention to his relentless pursuit of his people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so, you know, to me, it's such a beautiful thing that when we experience that, the holiness of God, like Isaiah, you know, we almost can't really serve him until we are undone in his presence.
Yeah.
We realize he's calling me to serve people that are just like me. It's not like I'm somehow other.
Yeah.
You know? It really is not. Like, when we are standing in that light of God, we can realize that we all have that sin problem.
Yeah.
Like in Ephesians where he talks about, you know, such were you.
Yeah.
Such were some of you. Yeah, like we walked in darkness and we couldn't walk in light until he pulled us out of darkness.
You were washed. You were sanctified and justified.
Yeah. And it had to be his doing. Mm-hmm. There's not a single person on this planet that is born qualified to minister except for Jesus Christ, who took everything on himself so that we could walk alongside him. Mm. We really serve people who are just like us.
Yes. I think in the jail ministry, that's the most important first lesson every volunteer has to learn.
Yeah.
I'm not different than the inmate.
No.
They got caught. I didn't, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But we are all the same. And, you know, the AA thing of the first step is admitting that we are powerless and that we have screwed up and that we are messed up and that we can't fix it all. The church is at its healthiest the more of that it recognizes.
Absolutely. And then the cool thing to me, like a few years ago, the Lord just really, you know, sometimes we go through these times where we realize again, anew.
Yeah.
You know, even though I've been a Christian now at that point for like 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Okay, you're still revealing some of the junk, you know, that has to go. And it can be hard. Like when you are exposed before the Lord, especially after you've walked this walk and you're like, hey, I got this.
Yeah.
That's a scary place to be.
Well, yeah, there's a little bit of pride that comes into our Christian walk of I've started to figure out what it means to be a Christ follower, which is usually when you turn into a Pharisee.
Yeah, I think our struggle with pride is more insidious than we ever. We need those moments when the Lord exposes us. Mm-hmm. And he's so kind. Like in that season for me, he exposed me again of, okay, you still got a lot of junk, you know, that needs to be fixed. But then he also came around and then talked to me about the vine. But I've chosen you.
Yeah.
Like, don't think that you chose me.
This is not a rejection. His exposure of what's wrong with us is not his cruelty. It's his kindness.
Yeah, exactly. And I chose you knowing all your junk.
Yeah.
You know?
This didn't surprise me.
Right. And I'm sovereign and I'm so good. I can still use you even though you've got a lot of junk. Yeah. He's just good that way.
At least that'll preach.
Yeah. You know? He's so good. Yeah.
This has been cool.
I've enjoyed this. This is great.
I almost wish we did this in the other order because hearing the second half of your love of following Jesus makes the prayer team make more sense. And that makes Kinsman Redeemer make more sense. But I jumped the gun. I'm like, tell me about Kinsman Redeemer.
Oh, that's okay.
No.
It's okay. I think there are a lot of, you know, I think there are a lot of people that we walk among who have that love of Jesus. That's a perfect place to start your journey serving, wherever it is.
Yeah.
For me, you know, we never among, we never come up with a great idea to be passionate for Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, we delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of the heart. So yeah. He is the first one that plants that in your heart. So when I talk about like his heart is out there in the street, that's where it is for me. But for somebody else, it's going to be at CareNet. Mm-hmm. For somebody else, it's going to be at the Help Center, or the jail ministry, or, you know, in your local church, it's going to be with widows or mothers or whatever the call is. He's going to, when we delight ourselves in the Lord, he is going to put that burning desire for whatever he's created that specific person.
And I think we need to spend a little more time discerning those things, listening, you know, what did God give me a burden for? Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people in ministry, I hate to say, but in the wrong places. They've done what they felt like they're supposed to do. There are so many people that would be amazing Sunday school teachers, but they don't know it.
Yeah.
And they've never tried it.
Yeah.
The reason I did jail ministry is because Tom Todd asked me to. And when I thought about it, you're probably going to roll your eyes at me. Sorry, Tom, for what I'm about to say. But the two or three people I knew that did jail ministry were Tom Todd, a guy named Pat Wagner, and they were people that I thought, these are really good people. I want to be like them. And then my second thought was, those guys are both pretty old. I don't see anybody who's under 50 doing this. If there's going to be a next generation of this stuff, maybe I need to say yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make myself out to be a savior or something. No, not at all. But it was, I felt a burden because of those things. Somebody needs to do this. And how come all of our volunteers are 70 plus? And look, I also get life cycle and jobs, right? You know, it's hard for a lot of peers my age to do some of these things because I'm fortunate to have a ministry job. So the church is happy when I go to the jail during the middle of the day because that's part of what they want me to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand when you're at the factory, they're not real happy if you walk out in the middle of the day. They're kind of frown upon that, actually. But, you know, there's different seasons of life for these different things.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I really like, so on this podcast, I've tried to have several of the charities tell the story of their charity. Mm-hmm. So you heard some of Margaret, you've heard Renee, Paul needs to come back and do one too. Yeah. And there's so many other charities in town too.
Oh,
I want people to just dream about what happens if you say yes to God, because there's stuff that God is waiting to invent until the person he's made for it says yes.
Yes.
And every cool thing, you know, somebody invented the Bible app. That's cool, isn't it? You know, like
cool.
Somebody invented the soup kit. Christians invented the hospital. And I look around the world and I see all the stuff that's broken. Christians have been God's answer to every societal
ill.
And in my opinion, we've made the mistake of thinking the government is going to do that. And they're never as good at it as we are because we actually like the people. You know? Yeah,
and we're empowered by God.
Yeah.
And we're called to do it. The grace is upon the church. Mm-hmm. To do those things. And grace is not just to cover our sin, but to empower us to do the calling that God has created us for.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I think there's a lot of problems in society. Right now, you know, every young family I know struggles with the cost of childcare.
Yeah.
What if Christians stand up? And, you know, some of the churches have childcare centers for that reason, but there's more need.
Yeah.
Education is a constant problem in our society.
Absolutely.
What if Christians stand up? I can't tell you how many people in our church are struggling caring for aging parents and they don't know what to do because it's hard to coordinate insurance and home health. And you get a home health nurse and they come twice and then they quit. And then you get another one, they come twice and they quit. Yeah. And I'm not bashing anything here.
Right.
But like, what if the church, every ministry you know of started because God put something on somebody's heart and they said
yes. Absolutely.
So what's God putting on your heart?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you something exciting. I don't know how much time we have. I'm going to just keep rambling.
Yeah, you
don't stop me at some point.
I tell everybody, if this is not like a 900 number, I don't get charged by the minute.
Okay,
so,
good. Yeah, but you talk about God fueling things. I could tell you a couple of really amazing stories. You really should have Pastor Jamie on to tell you something.
I need to get Jamie on.
Yes, you do, because we have had so many God moments. But I will tell you, like just when I was doing the cooking and plating team, there would be a couple of times so we're feeding 110 people, right?
And
it's a lot of food. It's a lot of food. And we, you know, it's the church ladies in Dixon, you know, for the most part are doing that. And so I remember, and then like in the summer and different times, sometimes, or different happenings in the community, you know, times comes up more short.
Yeah.
So I remember one time where it's a Saturday and I'm responsible to get all the food arranged for a Monday and we don't have enough food.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting on my front porch and telling the Lord, God, we don't have enough food this week. What am I going to do? Like, we have to feed 110 people and I'm broke. You know?
Yeah.
like
ideas, please. You know?
So I'm like, well, what are we going to do? And, you know, not long after that, I get a call from Pastor Jamie. Hey, I got a call from a caterer. Do you think you could use all this? I'm like, yes, so cool. I don't care what it is. We'll take it. We'll put it on the plate.
Out.
Yeah. And then, you know, at the same time, like another couple of weeks go by. And again, I'm like, we need some stuff to fill the plate. What are we going to do? And somebody calls and says, hey, I've got a guy that does a grocery rescue at Publix. Can you take some extra bread and dessert? I'm like, yes, I can. Well, and so she comes with like a truckload of boxes of all of this bread and dessert. And I'm like, okay, this is great. So I put some out for Monday, saved some for Thursday. And then at that time, it was also when the flood happened in Waverly.
Okay, yeah.
So I there. Yeah. And so I had a friend at church that lives in Waverly, was ministering to some people. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to take these extra boxes to her so she could take it to Waverly. And I remember there's 7 boxes. And I thought, oh, God, you're so good. Okay, I won't ever worry about food again. Well.
Yeah. You know? Until next time.
Until next time. And I remember it was my anniversary. It was like October 16th. So, you know, whatever that was, a couple of months after the flood. And we were in the same position. And I was like, you know, what am I going to do? And I was reading through the Bible chronologically. I have like this daily Bible, you know, and then on this day you read whatever passage.
Yes.
So October 16th, that happened to be Mark 8. I think it was starts in 14. So the disciples are getting on the boat. This is after he's fed the 5,000 and after he's fed the 4,000, you know. And they get on the boat and he starts talking to them about the yeast of the Pharisees. Mm. And their first thought is, he's mad because we didn't bring any bread with us.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Missed the point entirely.
Like, yeah, and he says to them, before I opened my Bible, he reminded me, you know, I'm sitting there worrying about what I'm going to do for food. He said, how many boxes of bread did you have left over?
Yeah.
And so I opened this passage on that exact same day, you know, like 5 minutes later, and it says, how many baskets full of bread did you have left over? And I'm like, well, I had 7.
Yeah.
And here I
think I've read that somewhere.
Saying, you know, we had 7 baskets left over. And he's like, oh, you have little faith, you know? And
that's
so
that's just God showing off.
Yes, exactly. And he does stuff like that all the time where we think we're going to be without and we're not.
That's so cool. That is so cool.
And we're not. Well, I have to have Jamie tell you about the miracle of the land that we've now purchased for the homeless.
Oh, well, tell for him.
Yeah. You need to hear that for him. But we do have plans. God has miraculously provided land for us. Our hope is he and Diane have sold their home and are building out there so that they can manage our homeless shelter out there. We're going to begin with disabled elderly women.
Yeah.
And then go from there. That's going to be our phase one.
Yeah.
But God has provided a greenhouse, a barn, at 3 live springs. Like this, it's a miracle. You really need to have Jamie on to kind of expound on that because he can tell you a lot. But God is still moving. Like when came and brought a casserole on a Monday, never would have imagined that at some point we would be able to have a hope of a shelter.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Man. Is there anything else you want to share?
You know what? Just, you know, if the Lord is moving on your heart to help, whether it is financially, we are building a shelter. That's going to take a lot more than we can't get. We're a new ministry, so as far as getting a loan, that's probably not going to happen.
Kind of laugh.
Yeah, you know, if they foreclose on a homeless shelter, that's really
they don't like loaning to churches and nonprofits because it's not good for them, and it's hard to resell. You know, they'll never get their money back.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. So, you know, this is a step of faith. And so if you're interested in helping towards that, if you want to volunteer, nothing is too small. If you want to be on our prayer team, if you want to give hundreds of thousands of dollars towards a shelter,
why stop there? Millions.
Right. Millions. Whatever. If you want to cook, if you want a plate, you know, whatever, we would
make
love.
PB&Js.
Yeah.
I know some of our groups have done snack bags.
Yes,
and
snack bags are huge. Yeah. And the heart is, you know, we want everything. I don't know if you've read that book by Jeremy Riddle yet called The Reset.
I have not, no.
Read that this summer. And he talked about in that he was in California during COVID, and he's, you know, a worship artist. And so he, during that time, churches, everything was closed down. It's California, so everything's very restricted.
Real strict.
The Lord took him aside during the season and said, even though he's a very well-known artist, he was like, you know, you are not a worship entertainer. Like, you're not an entertainer. It's like, you reminded him he is a worship artist. Like, he renewed that call of a Levite on his life to truly usher people into the presence of God, because that's what he's called to do. And, you know, at the same time, the Lord was reminding me, we are not a nonprofit. We're a ministry with nonprofit status. So our heart is for every segment of all the volunteers. Not that we don't welcome others, but of course.
Yeah.
But our heart is for everything to be saturated in Christ, led by Christ, moved by Christ. So if you're putting snack bags together or whatever, you know, we want every part of it to be prayer covered and anointed.
So if people do want to build snack bags or join a connections team or give you $3 million, how do they get in touch with you? What do they do?
Right. So they can call 615-338-9945. That's our assistance line, kind of our office number. Or they can contact us at KR, they can go to our website, which is krhomelesshelp.com.
And if it tries to have you date a Nazi, you're at the wrong site.
You're at the wrong site. Or you can go to contact@krhomelesshelp.com and send us an email to
krhomelesshelp. No dashes, just krhomeless.
Mm-hmm. Yep. krhomelesshelp.
Awesome.com.
Right.
I'll put that in the show notes too, so people can click on it and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we're on Facebook.
Sweet.
Yep.
Well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
Way more fun than that doctor's visit, you know.
I tell Dr. White all the time, you know, I poke people with sharp objects and they tell me, thank you. That's the weirdest thing.
Yeah. And every single time I've ever seen him, he goes, hey, I'm going to get you a shot for whatever. It ain't going to hurt me a bit.
Right.
Could you say something new for once, Dr. White? I'm getting tired of this joke.
Right. For sure.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And friends, thank you for listening today, giving us a little bit of your time. And maybe, who knows what God's poking and nudging and working on your heart. Who knows? Be open. We'll see. Until next time, I can't wait to see what God does in your story.
Thanks for listening to Rough Drafts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. While you're at it, help us spread the word by leaving a rating and review. Until next time, let's keep looking for how God writes His love into our stories.